flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stretch run of Grant and Danny. One final segment from New Orleans before we go get on the plane and we head back to the nation's capital. Our show today and every day brought to you by the good people at the law firm Condori and Murrah. They will help you update your last will and testament. They will set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you so that you can get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Danny, we will be huffing it a bit. You'll be in your wheelhouse, I would say, as we get rushing over to the airport and get on a plane. I'm sure it'll be stress-free with you and Ryan and Dad all thinking we're going to make the plane without any issues.
Yeah, the key, of course, is to get there, and we need to walk with purpose. This is a little bit less, where's my charger, or, I need to hurry. Let's get moving. Let's get there and make sure that it's fine, because things don't just magically work themselves out. That requires effort and an appreciation of the process. So I will be happy to be the lead goose and take your slings and arrows, sir.
What an amazing trip this has been,
yeah,
though.
We've wonderful,
been
right?
Throughout the day, but our buddy Christian, who makes this all possible and brings us down to Runs Brennan's, where we're broadcasting live from, the dinners, the breakfasts, the hospitality. We went to his house last night.
Amazing.
And ate a dinner that, if I could say, was on par with anything that we've had at any of these amazing restaurants.
Seriously.
In New Orleans. That was just fantastic. Beautiful home, decorated for Christmas. His family was there. It was just awesome. So it is good to make some memories and strengthen some friendships and relationships along the way here on what we'll call, with air quotes, a work trip.
Yeah, we were working, totally.
This is what it's all about. You
know
what
right?
I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and not to mention also the countless Washington fans that we encountered. I mean, I'm sure you took dozens of pictures, as did I, with folks who were so friendly and so happy. And again, this is the place you circle. When that schedule comes out, you go, with all due respect to Cincinnati, with all due respect to Philadelphia and maybe a couple other spots, I know a couple of the maniacs are going to go everywhere, and that's awesome. But I'm talking about if you make your one trip, this is where you make your one trip to, right? You eat your way through the city and have such a great time. And the New Orleans fans as well, the guy sitting next to me, couldn't have been a nicer man. He turned to me and said, I just want to apologize in advance. If I cheer, we don't have much to cheer about these days. And if I'm excited, don't take no offense. I'm like, buddy, come on, man. I've been there for 30 years. You're there now. You're facing a rebuild. We'll be fine. Just everybody's so nice, and this place is awesome.
Yeah, I mentioned this way earlier in the show, so maybe a little bit redundant. But what I did love about the game experience, there were a lot of things in stadium that were awesome. But what I really enjoyed most was the ribbing, the friendly back and forth and exchanges in the crowd with fans. And just that it's a New Orleans thing, mm-hmm. right? That, like, it's very loud.
Yep.
So if you notice it, you kind of look over and you're normally in the mode of, at a game, two people are yelling at each other, I hope I don't see a fight.
Yeah, I'm going, security close by. Because it was happening right in front of us, like the one you're talking about.
It was happening everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, all over the stadium that I saw. But then you realize, they're laughing. They're smiling. They're just joking. And it's so playful and mm-hmm. fun. And it was a really, really good atmosphere. But the fans, the Saints fans, are accommodating and nice. And we just had a blast. And we got to thank everybody for that. I will also say, I was on the beat for 4 years and traveled every single road game for four football seasons.
Yep.
I have never seen more Redskins football team or Commanders fans in one city kind of all together. There's probably been a time by numbers where that happened. I don't know when it would have been. But the difference in New Orleans versus like in Arizona, where sometimes you'll see the takeover, we saw that earlier in the year, people commented on, or in Tampa or the South, like Atlanta or Charlotte or something. Everyone's kind of staying right here or in the French Quarter, walking around Bourbon Street. It was just waves of burgundy and gold. To say that the town was painted Commander's colors probably does not do justice, you know, what the last couple days really were like.
Totally. And for the geography, for folks that don't quite know or understand, the French Quarter, where everybody is, as you said, it's where you go when you stop in New Orleans. It has more to, New Orleans has more to offer than that, but if you've got two nights or a night or whatever, it's where you end up, obviously. There's so much here. It's all concentrated. It's basically right exactly at 1 mile to walk from where we are, pretty much anywhere in the French Quarter, to the stadium. And then the stadium itself has this incredible setup. And I hope the Harris Ownership Group, right? Hey, guys, take out a steno pad. We need to take some notes here. That's how you do a city stadium. Okay, the Superdome itself, the renovations inside, they've changed some things. They refurbished it. It's nicer than it was. The electronic ribbon scoreboards and some of the other features and the walkways are much more functional than they were a handful of years ago when we were here. But the outside's still kind of that same dumpy building. It is what it is. Here's what makes it awesome. We talk about it all the time. If you do a city stadium, you can't really have the tailgating. Oh, no, the tailgating, right? And that's kind of something that is a bit of a trade-off. You can have some, but not that much. So what they've got is this thing called Champions Square. Champions Square is incredible. Here's what it does, okay? You show your ticket, not at some choke point, right in front of the stadium going in, going through metal detectors or whatever. You're hundreds of yards from anywhere. Right, any entrance you want to go in or out, you're able to do so. But when you show your ticket to get into Champions Square, way further away, there's no wait time, there's no slowdown. It's the easiest thing in the world. And then once you're in the grounds, you got food, you got drink, you got music, you got revelry. You can go in the stadium. You can go in and out of the stadium. When I went at halftime to use a little boys' room, a really nice attendant said, there's a huge line here. What you can do is go outside, leave the stadium. Walk around to gate A, and there's more bathrooms right there. The line's usually shorter. Incredible. Leaving the stadium to use the restroom to be able to then come back in just because the functionality of it is so good because you're inside Champions Square, right? All of that makes so much sense. It's so practical. I love that game day experience. It's really good. And that's how you do a city stadium. So to me, with all the RFK news that's been sprinkled, ooch in a boot, my friend, I'm hoping the Harris Ownership Group said, oh, we likes that.
Yeah, and all that is to say, by the way, the Saints are 5-9.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, people weren't going to the game locally and giving their tickets away. And the atmosphere was still really good. So kudos to them and the venue for that. Grant and Danny with you on the Fan Live from New Orleans. Let's get into some of the things that maybe we didn't pay enough attention to, some of the subtle elements of the game. We call it Don't Forget About.
Let's not forget.
What performances went under the radar in the latest Commanders game?
Why do I always forget that?
Don't forget.
It's time for Don't Forget About.
Can't forget about it.
With Grant and Danny.
Don't forget about, Danny, while this game was almost a disastrous loss, the Commanders were an inch away from blowing the Saints out, basically ending the thing effectively, confidently, comfortably, and scoring another touchdown. An outstanding leaping catch by Diami Brown, kind of the missing huge moment of his career. As the number two receiver yesterday, filling in for Noah Brown.
He's clearly the guy, by the way. Look at the snap counts.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that he was going to be the second most targeted guy moving forward. Well, he got a deep target, made an outstanding catch down to the 10-yard line for 25 or so yards to set Washington up first and goal, it looked like, only to be called back for a hold on Nick Allegretti. But there are different pressure points late fourth quarter when you actually go back and watch the game that you may have forgotten where you go, yeah, they almost collapsed. Yeah, it was almost the worst loss of the season. Yeah, it felt really terrible to win the way they did. But if a couple of things went differently, and I don't mean like, oh, if they only made that play. I mean, if they didn't commit a penalty on that play, if the refs did the thing they were supposed to do here, it would have been a more comfortable victory.
Don't forget about this officiating crew had themselves a bad, bad outing. Everybody's seen the clock play. We've talked about it a whole bunch, but there's more too. Right in front of us, where our seats happen to be, Terry McLaurin was interfered with. There is no question about that. That was easy. That was obvious. The ball, after a couple times where Daniels had you know, led McLaurin a little bit too far, just slightly, you know, off the fingertips or, you know, kind of just in front, this one was held up a little more touch, a little more loft on it, so McLaurin had to come back to the ball. He was interfered with. That took away a potential touchdown. It also took away a potential first and goal, where, at a minimum, again, points would have been easier to come by. You don't have to attempt a 54-yard field goal. You've got another chance to score, maybe run some more clock, first downs, whatever. A bunch of positive things were taken away from Washington there. I also think, by the way, in the spirit of not just being a homer, they missed what should have been a pass interference, either on, I think it was on Mikey Sanders still, in the end zone with his back fully turned. He's engaged with the wide receiver, textbook pass interference. It wasn't malicious or anything. You go into the personal fouls, the rough and the passer calls. I thought both were on the bad spectrum. I thought the first one was egregious, to be honest with you, but whatever. They did not have a great day in addition to the clock fiasco.
Speaking of the refs really quickly, before we move on from that, did you ever see the penalty they called on the roughing of the snapper?
Yes.
What did they actually call? Because when I watched the replay, it looked fairly innocuous.
It looked mildly innocuous,
yeah. It looked normal to me. It looked like most snaps and contact of the snapper.
It looked to me like...
And what I'm talking about for people that aren't like processing this. Early in the game, the first touchdown of the game, right before the Jaden Daniels crazy highlight play that we wouldn't have had to watch for years and years, Greg Joseph kicked a field goal and made it. It was negated, and they got to continue the drive because they called roughing, like basically contact of the snapper.
Yep.
And so Washington continued its drive, and that was when Daniels threw the touchdown pass to Terry McLaurin.
Right. So here's what it looked like to me. I would not have called that. Now, I'm not an NFL rules expert. I'm not an official. But it's designed to basically, I think of it as kind of like, honestly, like the Nick Sundberg corollary, where you blast the center and you break his arm or do something terrible because he's in a poorly leveraged situation or to snap the ball that way, and he's very vulnerable, right? So you got in a vulnerable spot, you're trying to protect him. So to me, this was engagement with guys around the line, and then contact gets made as opposed to making contact with the guy. Does that make sense? Like, so it's the way I thought about it, watching it last night, was it's what I always tell, like, my sons when they're grappling and wrestling with each other. It's not a specific injury intent, but it's a corollary to what happens when you guys are wrestling around like that. Someone bumps their head on a corner or a table or hits their head on the wall, or, you know, somebody gets scratched. It's not because you were trying to scratch them, but it ended up being a result of that. That's what it looked like to me, and I didn't think it should have been called.
Don't forget about, I'm pretty sure on all three of his deep shots, Terry McLaurin was lined up on the right side of the field, coming down the right sideline. It was very clear to me that not only did he motion more pre-snap in this game than he typically does, but he was on the right more and he was targeted more on the right. That should not be lost in today's discussion of this game. An adaptation, pretty clearly by Kingsbury, that has been called for, frankly, for years, dating back to his time in Arizona, by dumber people than him, frankly, but people that also know there is no good reason to keep your wide receiver on the left. There is no good reason, especially now without a wide receiver two and Noah Brown, to not move Terry McLaurin over to the other side of the field where Jaden Daniels prefers to target receivers more frequently. And on the deep shot where there was an interference, on the deep shot that was just off his fingertips, I believe, as well.
That was a post from the right side, yeah.
And then the deep post where he was overshot down near the goal line.
Mm-hmm.
All three of those, where did he line up? On the right side of the formation.
Don't forget about the fact that a field goal was missed, and Washington got bailed out by the fact they didn't get the snap off in time. Remember, the field goal that started the fourth quarter, they fully intended to get it off before the end of the third quarter.
There's your difference in the ballgame.
They missed a field goal and were bailed out by the fact they didn't get the playoff in time. So I understand your point about there, you know, an interference call when I made this too, or a break going their way later for having a much larger lead. They're also, whatever you want to call that, a mild screw-up to prevent themselves from screwing up more, from trailing at that point and having that being a game-losing touchdown that New Orleans scored with no time left on the clock, which also should never have happened because the officials messed that up. The point is, you messed around. You got away with one here in this game. You were fortunate to escape the way you did, even with their third, I believe, first half shutout of the season. That needs to be a mud stomp win, and it wasn't. And so we're all breathing a little bit heavy and maybe lost a year or two off our lives.
Don't forget about, though, they got a 91% chance via ESPN analytics to make the playoffs now.
Don't call me radio 91.
We can harp and talk about, and we should, the fact that this was scary, too disappointing, to potentially disastrous. They didn't really feel all that great. They came to New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
They left with a win.
That's right.
They are 9-5 for the first time since 1992 when your boy was 4 years old. They are in a spot right now where they are, without losing out, probably going to get into the playoffs. And if they can somehow win two of the final three, they will win 11 games for the first time.
11 games,
1991,
man.
And they will be on to the playoffs with some momentum, having won three out of four out of the bye. They did what they had to do. Now, I am a process over result guy like the rest of you guys probably are today. We can have most every conversation you want to. But they did improve their playoff chances to 91%.
Yeah, they came here and did what they were supposed to do. How, though, is what we should be discussing, and we certainly will. But you're right, that's the takeaway. They are 9-5. I think that's a lot better than 8-6. That's my own personal opinion. I'm willing to stand by that. Don't forget about the fact that their running backs averaged less than 3 yards a carry yesterday. That's the part of this game that I'm kind of not able to really process. You've heard me talk about it all show. You're probably annoyed. In fact, I'm sure you're annoyed at me, Grant. But I'm sure all you guys are annoyed as well. This is my thing in sports. When somebody or some team is excellent and they behave in a way that they behave against everybody else and are excellent against them, excellent against you, you go, tip your cap. That's a great team. If the Pittsburgh Steelers defense makes it hard for your offense, yeah, they do that to everybody. Same with the Eagles. Same with a Cy Young Award winning pitcher in baseball. But when a team sucks, when a pitcher sucks, when someone is objectively not good, as these New Orleans Saints are objectively not good at stopping the run, and they made you look like you have never run the football. That looked like a spurrier offense trying to run the ball once or twice just to satisfy the media. They could not move the ball on the ground at all. Jaden Daniels' running totals, and a lot of those big ones were on scrambles, bailed out their totals and make the rushing totals look a little bit better yesterday. He was 6 yards a pop. Brian Robinson, 3.1. Jeremy McNichols, 2.0. Chris Rodriguez, 1 carry for 2 yards. Sub 3 yards per carry for a really good running team against an atrocious run defense. That's what leaves me going, thank God they won that game. Let's go back home.
I will reiterate, still a little surprised they didn't try something else. Like, they carried the ball 24 times with running backs, and B-Rob got 21 of them.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Chris Rodriguez have a lot of success.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they didn't feel like he is different enough from Robinson to warrant giving that a go because they thought the results would be comparable. McNichols would be the change of pace, though. He got 2 carries in the game.
Two carries.
You gave their yards per attempt, which, I mean, that's accurate. That's what it is, right? But McNichols, 2 for 4. Rodriguez, 1 for 2. Talking about 3 carries for 6 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And Robinson got 21 attempts. At some point, I would have thought they would have just tried something else. Hey, let's kick off a drive with McNichols in there. Let's go outside zone or, you know, run something toward the sideline and see what happens
rather than
just trying to do the battering ram B-Rob thing. But they didn't do that. Don't forget about Luke McCaffrey didn't really play that much. He had 1 catch in the game, which went for 0 yards, I believe.
Yep.
It was the only time that he was targeted, and he only had, without Noah Brown in the game, 12 snaps total. 12 snaps. And that doesn't mean 12 routes run. That's how many times he was on the field. Many of those were runs. But that's out of 70-plus snaps offensively. And we could go through. We did it earlier, so we don't need to necessarily re-legislate all of the wide receiver snaps. But if you look at the total in the game, McLaurin, 70 snaps. Luke McCaffrey, 12. You know, Jamison Crowder came back from being out for weeks, had 21 snaps, playing more than Luke McCaffrey. I'm not sure I totally agree with that, but that's the way they wanted to go. So it does not look like they feel like it is time to unleash their third-round pick, so to speak.
Nor their second-round pick. Don't forget about the fact that Ben Sinnott had his 3rd catch of the season yesterday, even with Zach Ertz missing a huge chunk of that game after his best play of the year, I thought. That one-handed catch, a little bit of yak, all the way down to set up a goal-to-go situation. He leaves with a concussion, and Ben Sinnott had 1 catch. Their second-round pick on offense, right there in the middle there, and their third-round pick that they received in trade, not really stepping up when it's time, despite a lot of opportunity.
Well, I would disagree with you on a lot of opportunity for Luke McCaffrey. You got to play to catch the football.
Well, let me rephrase.
Yeah.
Meaning, who's ahead of you that should be like I'm good on Jamison Crowder. Like, Crowder's perfectly fine,
right?
But if he's getting the snaps ahead, that's what I mean by opportunity.
Sure.
Is Noah Brown's hurt. the obstacles to you getting consistent playing time are Dyami Brown and Jamison Crowder, who's freshly back from the injured list.
Yeah, the only thing I would disagree with, though, is they have those guys ahead of them.
Yeah.
And you're saying, well, that's clearly because Luke isn't better than them, I guess, at this point. And I don't know that. I mean, maybe they
I don't know
that,
it either, yeah.
But they are clearly prioritizing veterans over kids. And I can't throw the ball to myself. I had one target. I can't catch a pass if I'm not on the field. He didn't get on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I continue to just ask to see it. Now, they know more than I do, but I would like to see what it looked like,
mm-hmm.
right? When this guy has the ball thrown to him, he catches it. I'd like to see what that looks like. But it was good to see Jamison Crowder back. On Zach Ertz, we should point out, look, all concussions are not equal. I was texting with someone yesterday, and they told me, like, Jeremy Chinn after the game looked a lot better, I guess you could say, than, like, Zach Ertz. Ertz wasn't really around. The media didn't really see him or interact mm-hmm. with him. But I guess it sounded like maybe Ertz was, I don't want to speculate, having a tougher time, but, like, he was not in Jeremy Chin's mode where Chin's telling people, I'm good, I'm going to be fine, like, bouncing back quickly. We don't know what that looks
right.
like. But it is very possible yeah. that Ertz, who's their number two receiver in terms mm-hmm. of catches this year, maybe doesn't play against Philly. And yep. now you're out your number two, your number three, and your number four guy in catches because of Eckler out, concussion. Noah Brown out with the kidney thing that
That's
he's
right,
with.
Yeah.
And Zach Ertz.
That's
so you
point.
Would have McLaurin, who's your number one receiver, and then your next best pass catcher on the year is your fifth guy. Like, I think it's Zacchaeus or whoever.
That's right.
Or Dyami, maybe. Way down the board. I mean, they're starting to have real problems for a group that's not special in terms of pass catchers. Three of their top four might be out going into that Philly game.
That is a good point. And it was a struggle to throw the ball against them the first time. So I am with you. That is a source of concern for sure.
All right, let's get you a Caps power play before their game tonight.
It's time for Granddaddy's Power Play, presented by American Standard Heating and Cooling and MidAtlanticComfort.com.
The Capitals are in Dallas to take on the Stars tonight. Puck drop is set for 8 East. 21-6-2 Washington. Absolutely rolling. One of the great road teams, not only in hockey this year, but in recent history. I mean, they have broken records with their winning streak on the road this season. Washington trying to get another win after they beat the Sabres 4-2 at home. They talked the Blue Jackets 2-1. They beat the Canadiens 4-2 and the Leafs 3-1. So they have ripped off four consecutive wins since their overtime loss to the Sharks 2-1 going back to December 3rd.
Dallas is good. They are 12-3 at home. Only slightly worse than the Capitals' 12-2 away record, which again is just staggering to say. They got a whole bunch of guys who have a whole bunch of points. This is a tough matchup. I forget what was the number actually. Do you remember it? How many years it was between the Caps winning in Dallas as you know, playing for whatever reason?
20 years.
It was like decades, right? Of basically an entire middle chunk of my life. But obviously, not a lot of those guys had a lot to do with tonight. But still, just a noteworthy team. Yeah, the Caps need to continue rolling, man. They are in a really tight Eastern Conference, tight division, and they've been playing unbelievably well as Alex Ovechkin inches closer and closer to returning.
Yeah, they have won 10 consecutive games on the road.
Ridiculous.
At this point.
Ridiculous.
I mean, pretty amazing. They got an NHL record now within sight, but they're playing unbelievable hockey. They've given up the first goal in their past three games. They've won all three. They've trailed at some point in 13 of their 21 wins, but Spencer Carberry's boys just keep on coming, and now they're trying to set a record on the road. 10-game road winning streak. The NHL record is 12, which Washington could tie with a win tonight. And then another victory at Chicago tomorrow. Tonight could be the tougher of those two games on paper. But the Capitals, 9-4-2 at home, are actually better away from Capital One Arena. That is your Caps Power Play.
Grant and Danny's Power Play, presented by American Standard Heating and Cooling and MidAtlanticComfort.com.
All right, Danny, it is time to get to the airport. We got to say thank you very much to the good folks here at Brennan's. One of the best restaurants in America and certainly one of the finest restaurants of the French Quarter. And our good buddy Christian, who we know from the DMV, who came out to live here, his family, who have just made our trip so special, man.
Yeah.
It was very, very cool to be here. We owe them a ton because this is a memorable trip to get to bring up. I brought the wife. Just to hang out with the crew, it was very, very cool, and they're way too nice to us.
Yeah, unmatched generosity. I mean, it's unparalleled. The ability to host is not something I ever quite understood. Right? It's like, oh, someone comes over to your house, you're nice to them. It's different, and you could see it. Our guy Christian puts on a clinic in that regard. So Ryan and I the other day went to Napoleon House, which is a place known for its muffaladas, and it was allegedly going to be one of the places that Napoleon was looking at to come live when he wanted to move to New Orleans in retirement after all his military campaigns have been over. We got a tour from the GM over there. It's part of the Brennan's Restaurant Group. And he went on and just raved about Christian and about his enterprise and how good he is at hosting and the level of skill and dedication and thoughtfulness that it takes to do it well. And you see it. He puts on a clinic. So thanks to him, his family, of course, the folks here at Brennan's, all of New Orleans. Everybody's so welcoming. I mean, it really is just a wonderful spot to come visit.
Well, the example I always give is you don't have to pick us up at the airport. We'll just Uber to the hotel.
Yeah, we're already here, man. We're coming.
Yeah, you're putting us up in. Like, thank you. But he's going to pick you up at the airport.
Yeah.
But he's not just going to pick you up at the airport. He's going to have a party bus that picks you up at the airport. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be standing there with champagne already poured on a tray at the bottom of the escalator, like above and beyond.
And a Cesarac, which Ryan shot like it was a tequila at closing time.
Just makes you feel like a king. So thank you to him. And it was a blast. We had a really good time. The whole team, the Grant and Danny show out here, we had a good time. We came, we saw, we conquered. We
yes,
ate
indeed.
A lot.
Yeah.
We'll find out how much you ate.
It's a number.
When we get back, which should be fun.
Uh-huh.
And the Commanders leave with a win. We won't talk about the specifics anymore.
It's not important to dwell on those.
But they win the football match that they came here to win. So enjoy Monday Night Football, two games. Obviously, that Falcons matchup with the Raiders, huge implications for Washington. You guys will be glued to that one, I'm sure, tonight. For Danny and Ryan and Darius and the whole crew,
love you, Dad.
G&D saying so long. We will be talking to you. Safe travel and all ahead. And then back in D.C. at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Looking forward to that. Overtime comes your way next on The Fan.